School PR professionals spend a week or two each year networking, if they're lucky. We pour into this professional development, and the conversations drive us in our work. Collaboration is one of the best parts of our job, but then we go back to our daily work and the buzz of bright conversations and innovation starts to wear off.
Welcome to School PR Happy Hour. We seek to create a shared space of collaboration and an opportunity to continue those conversations long after the closing sessions of our state and national conferences.
We are a community of communicators that lean on each other in hard times and learn from each other regularly.
This podcast is about just that, getting to know each other better and sharing our passions about furthering education, one story at a time.
Welcome back to School PR Happy Hour. I'm Erin McCann. Across the country, we've seen school PR practitioners making career changes. Some of our colleagues are advancing and running departments for the first time. Others are moving into the private sector, into roles that leverage the skills that they've learned in school PR. No matter what change is headed your way, your school PR colleagues are here to love and support you. Now, there's one person that I've been following for a few years, and that's our guest today. Dr. Amanda Holdsworth, APR, is the founder and CEO of Holdsworth Communications, a research-based communications agency. Amanda has an interesting path, having earned both her APR and her doctorate to lend credibility, expertise, and research to her communication plans. So Amanda can tell her story so much better than I can, and I want to just start off by welcoming her to the show. Amanda, I'm so happy that you are joining me.
Erin, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad that we finally have the chance to chat.
We really do. It's funny. It's like so many of our other conversations with friends. We get engaged with conversations, especially on Twitter, and then you kind of feel like you've known people forever, and you realize you've actually never had a direct conversation. So I think we've been following each other for a while now.
Yeah, at least a couple of years, I'm sure. And you know, I know with the pandemic, conference attendance has been here, there, virtual, hybrid. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all of your Twitter friends, you don't always get the chance to meet in real life.
I know, it's kind of funny, but it's fun to be able to actually sit down and have this conversation. And your journey really is so interesting. I mean, you're kind of living the dream. You're running your own show and you've got this fabulous background. So let's start off by you just sharing your story, kind of where you came from, the work that you've done in school PR, and what led you to where you are today.
Sure. Well, you know, I've always known that I wanted to work in communications. I have an older brother who's 9 years older, and he had started in radio broadcasting. So I saw that from a young age. I mean, he went to school for that when I was nine. So I was always around something communications related. And where I went to school in Canada at the time, we used to have 5 years of high school. And by 11th grade, we kind of had to pick the path that we were going to go down. And I thought I wanted to go into international broadcasting. I like the behind the scenes work. This was in the 90s. So, you know, PR, social media, those sorts of fields weren't really that big. And obviously social media websites were like, I don't even think there was a website too much in existence at that point, at least not for the mainstream. So I went into school for communications management at college. And my very last college class, a professor pulled me aside and said, I think you should really consider PR as a field. And I didn't really know too much about PR. And so I said, well, what does that involve? And he said, well, it's a lot of writing. It's helping put an organization in the spotlight. You're helping promote all the great things that they're doing. And I thought, wow, that sounds perfect because I love to write. So the natural next step for me, being that that was my very last undergraduate class and I had not taken any courses and didn't really know too much about PR, was to go get my master's degree. So I got my master's in arts and strategic public relations from the University of Southern California many moons ago. I'm actually, this will be my 20th year anniversary from my master's program. And when I was there at USC, I got to, thanks. I don't know if it's congratulations, but I appreciate it. If I say that out loud to people, I'm 20 years after my graduate degree. That's a little bit jarring, but you know what? That's all right. I will own the wisdom that came
exactly
with it. So, you know, after I graduated from USC, I was encouraged to try different fields. And one of the ones that I kind of fell into was educational communications. I had moved to Boston after graduation. And if anybody is in or around the Boston area, you know, especially with higher ed, which is where I start working, if you throw a stone, you hit another college or university. So it was a phenomenal mm-hmm. place to learn competitive marketing strategies, public relations, all of that. That's where I cut my teeth in school PR. I'd worked for a couple of years in nonprofit and a little bit of corporate crisis communications consulting, and I just fell in love with education. So that's where it all began, and I just have kind of never left. And that was 2003, I think, was the first full-time job, although I had done some internships and some part-time work in education before that.
Fantastic. And you're right. I mean, Boston, it's super dense with higher ed, isn't it? I mean, there's so much brain power up there. People are doing such incredible things.
Yeah. And it's, and I actually worked, my boss there was and had an advertising background. He had worked at an advertising agency, and coming up from what I like to call the pure PR background, where, you know, we were taught ethics, very strong ethics, like never take a reporter out to lunch or for coffee or pay for anything and never pay for mm-hmm. an ad. And it really opened my eyes to the power of combining marketing and public relations. So I'm very grateful for that opportunity. And like we were just talking about, Boston's so competitive with mm-hmm. higher ed. You really have to narrow in and learn storytelling, and, you know, from the heart of it, you know, how can we make our story stand out in such a crowded marketplace? And I really don't think there could have been a better marketplace for me to start my career in school PR.
And how interesting that at that point you were already kind of merging public relations and marketing, because I feel like at least in the K-12 sector, they've been very, very separate for a long time. But what we're seeing right now, and we actually did an episode on this just a couple of months ago, is that fierce need for marketing. But I do feel that that's a slightly different conversation. I want to hear more about the continued advancement in your career and in your investment in yourself. So it's no secret to our listeners that I'm completely obsessed with continuous learning. Justin and I have talked about that, and he's always giving me such a hard time about the next challenge and the new thing. And I do have some fun updates for our listeners a little later in the season on kind of what's going on there as we close out season three. But Amanda, we want to hear about you. So you've got some fabulous credentials, and let's walk through them one at a time. Tell me and tell our listeners about why you decided to pursue the APR. We see a lot of thought leaders in our industry do have those credentials.
You know, and I've had my APR for a long time. I think I'm going on year 15 maybe with it. So when I got my APR, at this point, I'm now living in Michigan, just outside of Detroit, and I'm working in private schools, actually my second private school. And I became very involved with PRSA Detroit with that chapter, and everybody seemed to have their APR. And a lot of the senior mentors at the time, I'm only in my mid-20s, and at the time, a lot of the senior mentors are saying, listen, if you ever, you know, want to get these big jobs, if you ever want to go work at a University of Michigan with a, you know, vice president role or, you know, mm-hmm. another larger organization like that, you need to have it. And I said, well, I've got my master's in strategic public relations, which is, you know, very credible as well. And they said, mm-hmm. yeah, but the APR will really show you like how you should be doing things properly. And at that point, I had only been ever in maybe a 2-3 person shop. Yeah, heading up the most, you know, 2 people. I was still very young in my management career. And they said, you know, a lot of what you're doing is based on how you would handle it as a solo. And with the APR, it gives you the opportunity to go back and learn and really reflect and think about, you know, how would I do this if I'm running a team of 10? Mm-hmm. How would I do this if I'm running a team of 20? And I was advised, you know, if you ever wanted to start an agency, that this is something that you could always go back to and just learning how to deal with legal issues, ethical issues, things that you might not get necessarily personally in your career, but you need to be prepared for. So that was a big impetus for me to get the APR.
Absolutely. You know, I had a conversation with a peer the other day when they were asking, like, what is the APR? Like, what does that mean if you're kind of putting it in context of a different industry, and why do you need it? And I tried to give this lofty explanation. Then I finally drilled it down to, you know, if you go to see a doctor, they have a medical licensure. If you have a teacher in a classroom, they have a teaching certificate. Like, it is that kind of proof by example that you are credible in the work that you're doing. And we've been very supportive of the APR process on this show. So I think that's fabulous advice that your mentor gave you there. And it obviously lent itself to your future. But let's jump to your next level of credential. You have a doctorate in education, and we don't always see that with our school PR practitioners. Kind of walk us through why you chose that path.
If we had a weak moment. No, I'm just kidding. So, you know, I flip flop between K through 12 and higher ed, PR mm-hmm. for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years, the first decade or so of my career, a little bit longer. And, you know, in higher ed, any of the universities I was at, whether I was teaching or in the PR communications realm, they valued the research component so much. And sure. Personally, I just saw how much a lot of these places were willing to spend to bring in outside consultants who are researchers. And mm-hmm. From my standpoint, I've always loved research. And that's something that was hammered home way back when I did my master's at USC, was everything was research-based. Like you never started a plan without doing your due diligence, doing the research, everything. Like, I mean, every project we did, everything was research-based, which right. really lent a lot to my interest and my skill set. And, you know, as I was leading larger and larger departments and getting frustrated at the higher ed level, because I would sit and just do all this research at night and on weekends, and the analysis, particularly like in the enrollment marketing components of higher ed. And then they would go out and hire an outside consultant mm-hmm. who would find maybe the exact same results I had, or maybe not even as in depth. And I saw the amount of money that they would spend on this. And I would just get so frustrated saying, you know, I have this all in-house, but I wasn't seen as credible because I didn't have the doctorate, which sure. just made me furious. And it's probably not the right reason to go and get a doctorate. But I'm thinking, you know, if I want to stay in this field and I need to have some credibility, I'm not going to, you know, be in these roles, whether I stayed in higher ed or went to K-12 or consulted, I'm not going to have the trust in my credentials if I don't have the research. And whether that's good or bad, right or wrong, it's neither here nor there, but I just kept experiencing it again and again in higher ed. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I can do this work. I love this work. I love research. I love strategy. I love planning. And I also, you know, I enjoyed teaching at that point. When I went for my doctorate, I had already been an adjunct for over a decade. And right. so I had already taught at the higher ed level for a long time. And you know, part of what as I was thinking and planning out, okay, well, I'm going to eventually launch my consultancy. How am I going to do that? You know, on limited savings, we've got kids at home, all mm-hmm. these other things. And the thought was, well, you know what, maybe I could supplement that with teaching. And even at the time, adjunct faculty positions were starting to become hard to get without a doctorate. So I thought, well, here are my options. I can either keep going down the path I am, or I can level up and then double down on the professional development and pursue a path that I knew not only would help shape my career, but it would also give me the extra skills that I knew I had to have been missing. You know, there had Sure. to have been a reason that I wasn't getting some of these, you know, the higher level research projects credibility. Obviously, I knew how to do communications research, but what else am I missing, especially from the educational context? So, you know, I thought about it. And I thought, gosh, you know, I had such a phenomenal experience at USC with my master's. When they opened up and did a hybrid version of their Doctor of Education program, I thought, well, this is a no-brainer. It's actually the only program I applied to.
Oh, fantastic.
Only one I wanted to be in, because I just knew the connections. I mean, I could still call my old professors from over 20 years ago and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or I'm thinking about doing this for my consultancy, or thinking about teaching this class. And they always pick up the phone. And so that the network, I'm not trying to turn this into a USC commercial,
no,
but I just knew that the network was phenomenal. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, if I'm going to stay working in educational communications, it makes sense for me to have a doctor of education and be around educators, like mm-hmm. true educators. You know, I'm teaching at a different level, but I don't have that teaching and learning experience, the formal experience. So that was really why I decided to pursue it and pursue that particular path.
Fantastic. And like you said, this is not a commercial for USC. They are not sponsors of the show, but I have heard really wonderful things about that program. So I'm glad that your experience was good there.
Yeah, it's good. It's you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into this, but a doctorate is no joke. So it's a tough program.
Absolutely. It requires a lot of time and a lot of dedication. So, okay.
Yes,
so you go and you get your APR, and then sometime later you pursue this doctorate. And so you've got lots of practical hands-on experience. You have lots of education. You've got kind of the credibility behind your name. And then some time passes and you launch Holdsworth Communications. You mentioned earlier, you always knew you wanted to launch a consultancy. Kind of walk us through that. Like, how did you decide it was the right time? And what exactly do you do at Holdsworth that kind of lends itself to the K-12 sector, or not even K-12, but just school PR as an industry?
Sure. Well, you know, when I look back on my career, I've really been doing some sort of freelancer consulting since the 90s, you know, whether it was, you know, putting up a website or doing PR. I mean, I even bartered part of our wedding. So right. You know, a little bit of PR for this, you know, in exchange for this sort of service. So I'd always been doing it. I had a lot of friends working in nonprofits, so I do a lot of pro bono work. It's something I always enjoy doing. And, you know, we kind of talked about this back and forth before, I don't know, Erin, maybe a couple months ago, but mm-hmm. I started in private higher ed, you know, a private higher ed in the graduate school, very, very specific niche graduate school. Then mm-hmm. I went to a K-8 private school and then a K-12 private school, then a private 4-year university that served traditional adult students. And then I went to a major public research university, one of the top in the country. And, you know, as I was rounding out from that, and I had some consulting experience with different types of schools, everything from parochial to, I mean, I even helped, I had friends working in public school districts, particularly through my doctorate that needed some help or guidance. And I thought, well, man, you know, the only thing I haven't really done in education is public K-12. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done the private side in both higher ed and K-12 and the public higher ed. And so, you know, which gave me the experience and things that I wouldn't have had in private schools, such as the lengthy procurement process and bidding processes and, you know, just working in a massive organization. And so I went into public K-12 and I really thoroughly not only just enjoyed the work because it gave me the same sense of a satisfaction as I had when I was working with my friends in nonprofit, mm-hmm. but it was always a challenge. You know, I had lots of fires always to put out in both private schools and in higher ed. There was always something going on, especially when I was in, you know, smaller areas, but public school PR just gave me such a taste for what's happening behind the scenes. I got to work with lobbyists and government officials and superintendents all across. You know, I was at an intermediate school district, so we supported 28 school districts and 220,000 students. So It was a really, really, really unique experience. But I was also, like many school PR friends, especially now, those of you who are still there in the trenches during the pandemic. I left before the pandemic, but once I had that doctorate in hand, I just knew, I'm like, it's now or never, mm-hmm. you know? And I think a lot of it, probably when I was looking at my husband and how much he took on for me to be able to do my doctorate, took on at home, I'd actually been accepted to my doctorate program the same day that I found out I was pregnant with our second child.
Oh my goodness.
So I started my program with a newborn. I was home from the hospital and I kind of forgot to defer, and my book showed up 8 days later. And so at that point, the account had been debited and there was no turning back.
Oh, that's so overwhelming.
I just saw, it was pretty, and you know, I will say, like, having a baby is prepares you for doing a doctorate because there's very little sleep involved and you're doing things at like insane hours and you're efficient as efficient goes. And so,
right.
You know, as I looked at him and my husband's also an entrepreneur, and I thought, you know what, it's now or never. You know, he sacrificed a lot for me and he believes in me and I believe in what I'm doing, and I want to have the opportunity to work and make an impact on schools around the world. And so mm-hmm. I just jumped in and I took a role as a full-time assistant professor, just like I had thought I eventually would do. And I did that for a year while starting up the consultancy and then launched consultancy full-time, and I haven't looked back.
That's fantastic. So how long has Holdsworth Communications been in operation?
Well, officially with the LLC, 4 years.
That's absolutely fantastic. What sort of services do you offer with your agency?
Well, everything's rooted in storytelling. And I know that's kind of a buzzword now, but if you worked with me 15 years ago, it was always the hallmark of any of the communications plans that I was doing. So we really focus on, you know, three primary areas. We looked at brand strategy, and I've given presentations for those of you who have seen them over the years on, you know, branding's, it's not just a logo.
Right.
And so we really take a look at the strategy, you know, how are you perceived in the marketplace? What is feedback? Everything we're doing is obviously very research oriented. I take a lot of pride in my research skills. Mm-hmm. I take a lot of pride in my pack of 25 different color highlighters that I use when I'm coding raw data, but brand strategy. I'm telling you, it's, there's something special about, I think, especially school communicators and those who really understand that research is such a hallmark, and you're going to get to the point, I think, where squiggly little lines and things that are circled in different color pens and different highlighters and looking for those trends. And really that's a lot of what we do with the brand strategy. It's, mm-hmm. you know, where are we at, or what's the messaging, and looking at audits and how are you being perceived and what are your competitors doing and how are they being perceived, and, you know, still trying to stay in the lane and just developing the whole messaging as well as the brand image. And then public relations, since that's my baby. And as much as I've said over the years, especially going back, you know, 14 years ago or so, when the recession hit Detroit really hard and we lost a lot of our full-time education reporters, you know, thankfully I'm seeing things bounce back in a lot of the major newspapers where they have whole education staff now, you know, a whole team. It's become a fun, difficult, but fun field again for me. I get a lot of pride out of our PR work, you know, in the last year. Not to toot the own horn, but it's just been so proud of the positive stories that have come out despite the pandemic.
Right.
We've secured NBC News and the Wall Street Journal and Parents Latina and Good Housekeeping Magazine. And just looking at all those different angles is so fun for me in PR, and just finding those little areas that nobody else would think to search up for story. And so PR is that's actually my biggest team within Holdsworth Communications, is our PR team. I value their skills as writers and you know, as pitching experts. And then enrollment marketing, that's where all of my mm-hmm. research started. You know, I think there's something to be said when you start out working at a tuition dependent institution, particularly if you've been in a tuition dependent institution during a recession. You know, when I was at the two private schools I was at outside of Detroit during the recession, I just tell you, we would bleed students. And, you know, at one of the private schools, we didn't. The other one I was at, it was, okay, we can't get down. We can't lose 10 more families this month. If right. so, we're going to be closing the doors. So you really learn a lot about quick analysis and turning on a dot and testing and trying and testing and trying. And so we do a lot of the enrollment marketing, looking at the whole process, looking at the whole funnel. Where are the gaps? What can be addressed? And I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty frugal. Like my husband always kind of jokes, he's like, you're more frugal with your money for work, you know, especially on budgets and at home. But, you know, as I look at it, I don't like to spend or waste money. I don't want to. And even now with clients, that's one of our hallmarks, is mm-hmm. I don't believe in spending money if we don't have to spend it. Is there a lot of time involved in something like grassroots marketing and PR? Oh yeah.
Right.
And yes, there is time and money dependent on those, but really taking a look at where's your best bang for your buck. And if this doesn't work, what's next and how do we tweak it and move on?
What's up guys, Justin here. Aaron and I are super excited to welcome back Class Intercom as our sponsor for season 3 of School PR Happy Hour. Last year, we told you that Class Intercom is a comprehensive social media management tool designed specifically for schools that allow for content creation from an unlimited number of users, including students, in a safe and carefully moderated way. That's still very true. But did you know that Class Intercom also has a reporting feature that does complete archiving, all for one school-friendly price? To learn more, head to classintercom.com and get started today.
So Amanda, when we were talking about kind of how we would focus this episode, because you are interested in so many things and you've done so many things, we kind of circled around several topics and we zeroed in on kind of being strategic with career advancement. And that was something that you said you were very proud of how strategic you had been. this feels like the perfect time to have this conversation, because at the top of the episode, I mentioned how many of our peers are leaving school PR. And I would just like to say that I firmly believe that other people are standing up and starting to notice how talented our school PR practitioners are, and that that should be celebrated. I know there are a lot of conversations happening out there and people are like, what's going on? It's been really rough out there the last 2 years. I think anyone who's being honest would say that. And it's phenomenal that people have these new, fantastic opportunities. But opportunity means change, and change can sometimes be scary. So talk to us about how you knew that certain moves in your career were the right ones for you, and how you strategically planned that out to be exactly where you are, which is very clearly living your dream, which is something I think we all want. We want to plan out long term what it is that we dream and hope for, and then craft a really good path to get there.
You know, I think it goes back to my mentor for my master's program, because originally I went into my master's program, particularly in LA, thinking I'm going to go into sports and entertainment PR because I was a college athlete and that made a lot of sense to me. And I worked for the USC football team athletic department. So of course, sports PR sounds great. And I remember my mentor saying, don't pigeonhole yourself. You're young, you need to try out a couple things, you know, don't be afraid to move around. And I think honestly, you know, part of it, I came out of school right after 9/11 with my master's, and there were not a lot of jobs. And for those of us who were in the working field back then, I mean, we just saw jobs dry up. We saw a lot of recessions. We've been through a couple of recessions. Like, I feel like I'm ancient now, but you know, you kind of took what you could get. And, you know, I did some agency work and I worked in some really wonderful organizations. But when I found education, which obviously I was passionate about, I was a graduate assistant at USC, and part of what I was doing there was, 30 hours a week doing PR for international studies programs. So I had a little bit of taste of it there. And then when I started working full time, just finding the stories that were so rich, and I loved it. But, you know, I didn't know, is this where it's going to be at? I don't know. You know, when I moved to Michigan and the recession hit and I was working, you know, my very first private school I had worked at, I came into kind of a sinking ship, and, you know, we ended up merging with another school, and there wasn't going to be much of a director role for me there. So I was able to just from networking and taking a look around, I mean, one of the top private schools in the country was just down the road, and ironically, they were hiring for a communications director. So I thought, why not? I'll put my name in and spent many, many years there learning under some of the best people I've ever worked for and worked with, and very, very talented in development communications and alumni relations and just some really interesting fields. And from there I thought, well, you know, it's the recession still hitting Detroit. How many of these, you know, we were doing great in terms of enrollment, but you know, I didn't know what was still going to be out there. And I started going on some job interviews and outside of education. And every time I was just like, I can't see myself doing this or being a storyteller for this certain type of organization. Not that there was anything wrong with any of it, but my heart wasn't in it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always had the goal, if I lived near Ann Arbor, and I thought, gosh, you know, if you can get in the University of Michigan, and I tried for years and I just kept trying, and I got in with a private university, and that ended up being one of the best experiences ever. I spent several years there, you know, and getting promoted a couple times to executive director of communications and marketing, getting to work on enrollment and getting to work with different audiences that I wouldn't have gotten to do if I had said, well, my only goal is to ever get into University of Michigan, and just say, I'm going to turn a blind eye to it. And even with that, I thought, well, you know, higher ed was drying up at the time. Do I stay in higher ed? And I tried to dip my toes back in a nonprofit and got in with a nonprofit for a very short period of time. That was great, but I was actually working more than I was working at school PR. Sure. And I thought, I think it was about the third day, I just missed the school environment. Obviously I have a weirdo obsession with learning and degrees and, you know, being able to be around people that are talking about schools, wherever it is, if it's K-12 or higher ed. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate to get into University of Michigan. And that's actually kind of a neat story, because my daughter, my oldest daughter at the time, had had to have open heart surgery, and it was a really horrible time in her life. And thankfully she's doing wonderful now, but she had it at University of Michigan. They saved her life. And as I was sitting there, I thought, I came across a job opening, and it was for a director. It was for a, what was it, marketing and communications manager for the corporate relations unit of University of Michigan. And my job would be to promote all the great things happening at U of M. So big companies would come and fund research, fund philanthropic opportunities for students and potential students. And my daughter was part of two research studies at U of M. She had a very rare condition, and she was one of the first pediatric, actually the first pediatric cardiology patient to be treated in the way that she was treated. And I thought, I mean, talk about like divine intervention. If you believe in that, you know, it was like, wow, you mean my job would be to be able to use my big mouth and bring more corporate dollars so that research studies like this could be done. And I applied, and you know, a month later, I'm sitting in my seat at U of M, and I had some phenomenal connections there and got to where I just kept my eyes and ears open. And the wonderful thing about working in corporate communications within a university setting is I got to interact with just about every school on campus and talk to different people. In fact, one of the associate vice president of research, who's a bigwig in engineering, actually sat on my dissertation committee for the School of Education, because he and I had worked on some DEI initiatives that we were appointed to by the president at the time, and we became very close. And I think what it was, I was just always open to talking to people. And you know, part of the big part about being a storyteller is to listen and get engaged. And I mean, gosh, in a place like U of M, where like everybody has some kind of interesting story and there's so many different things to learn, and people are coming from all over the world to study there and teach. It was just like, for me, it was like euphoria. Like, oh my gosh, like what am I going to learn about today? Or who am I going to go visit, you know, with this company, and what am I going to take pictures of, and what do I get to market? So, you know, I thought I was going to stay at U of M for my whole career, but there was just something that was like, I loved my time. And I had the best boss. I had the best team that I've ever worked. I mean, they were just phenomenal. And there was just something that was just missing for me. And I don't know if it was, you know, like what's next. You know, we kind of talked about that, Erin, you know, the passion that you have for your job, and you're just like, okay, what's next? I've got this done. I've got this branding campaign done. You know, I've got this marketing campaign. I've done the website. I've rebranded this. And, you know, now, you know, the social engagement metrics are through the roof, and record number of corporate dollars, and our e-newsletter rates are off the charts. And now we're doing videos and they're great. And it was, but there was just something missing. And it just so happened, I was poking around one day on a friend's Facebook page, had shared a job opening in public schools. And I thought, huh, okay. So I've done private K-12 a couple times, or, you know, at least K-8 and K-12. And I've done private higher ed. I've done that both at the 4-year level and the 2-year level, and the doctorate. And I'm working on my doctorate, and here's my opportunity to go into K-12 in the public side. I can't pass this up. It sounds like a great challenge, and it sounds like something I want to do. And so I applied, and a couple months later, I'm sitting, you know, in a public K-12 district. And I thought, well, this will really round out. And I wasn't thinking at the time like, hey, I'm going to have a foot out the door. You know, every time I went into a job, I wholeheartedly believed that this is going to be it for me. You know, like I'm going to retire from this job, no matter what it was. I always worked at places with great retirement plans, and I thought, you know, and I always had phenomenal bosses, and I thought I would never leave, never going to leave. I'm never going to leave. And then it's just, I wasn't scared, I guess, to listen to the ache that I might've had, that just something was just missing. And I didn't find that again until I started consulting full time.
I think you said so many things so incredibly beautifully. I mean, you've circled back to storytelling all of the time, which you're right, it has become a buzzword, but that doesn't mean that it isn't true. And so we've heard so many people talk about the power of storytelling and investing in a good story and making your audience hear the details in the story and not just the facts. And we do know that that works. So I think that's phenomenal. And thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing that story about your daughter. Because one, I felt like I was along for the ride with you as you shared that. And then two, how perfectly poised were you for that role at the time? Because you could speak with such authenticity about the benefits of that university and how that directly impacted you. And I think in the work that we do in K-12, I keep saying K-12, but really I mean school PR, because we have people in our community that work in higher ed. We have people that work in private schools. So in our K-12 or in our school PR community, we have people that are putting themselves out there and they're making themselves vulnerable every single day to be a part of that story. So thank you for sharing that. And then I want to push on one thing. I know I don't want to take up your entire evening, but I do want to push on one thing, because you've had incredible luck, but also great strategy with the progression of your career. And if we circle back to what I said about how many of our peers and colleagues are deciding to make changes and that we're going to champion that and support that, what are the tough questions that they should be asking themselves to assess whether it's time for that change? As like you said, there was a bit of an ache and you were trying to figure out what that was, or when is it that we're going through a tough time, but we need to stay because our jobs that we're in now also deserve brilliant storytellers and practitioners. I know that that's not an easy question I just asked you.
No, and I appreciate it. Thank you for the nice compliments. But, you know, my dissertation was actually on the effects of organizational culture on employee engagement. And a lot of that was driven by what I was seeing in education. And this was pre-pandemic. So you can imagine how lit up my phone got as soon as the pandemic hit with research partnership requests and, you know, hey, can you submit a chapter on this book about this? Can you speak to this on this webinar? I was speaking all over the world on webinars about my research, my postdoc research, because my postdoc research actually led to the culture comm model. And this is really relevant to school PR in particular, because basically with the culture comm model, we take a look at, you know, we can promote, we can do all the things we can do to make something sound so enticing to our target audience. Mm-hmm. But the truth be told, if things are a hot mess inside the organization or the school or whatever the case might be, it's not going to help with retention, whether it's retention of students, retention of staff, retention of talent at any level. And it's just going to make your job as a marketer defeating, right? Mm-hmm. Because here you are, you're doing everything you can. You are like knocking it out of the park. But if there's no focus on how people are being treated internally, because we know very well, especially in education, who sees it, you know, if a teacher is being treated poorly, the kids will eventually see it, right? And when before the pandemic, when parents were in the school a lot more, and now, you know, as it's picking up again, I just remember being in private schools. We had parents there all the time, and they became, you know, like, you know, you didn't want to get too friendly with them, but a lot of them became almost friends, you know, stop by, you know, see how you're doing and checking in on you. Well, guess what? When you have people around the school building a lot, and if people aren't being treated well, it does not take a rocket scientist to figure out something's going on. And so I think, you know, particularly as people are looking at, do I stay or do I go? You have to look at what is your team and what does your leadership look like? You know, is this the leader that's going to be in your school or district or university for the next 10 years, do you think? And are things under this particular leader not jiving with you? Mm-hmm. You know, do they not respect communications or marketing? You know, you spoke earlier, Aaron, with, you know, school PR getting a lot more respect. And yeah, we're seeing it. We're seeing it from the consultant side, because some schools and districts are panicking because their people have left, or they haven't supported them in ways, you know, by bulking up team members or giving them extra support when they needed it. And so you have to really, I think, take a true look at it and go, you know, I'm talented. I'm doing a lot, especially all of you that have been in these trenches the last, I don't know how so many school PR people have done it, right? You know, and I think it's the sheer determination that I don't want to let my district down, or I don't want to let my school down. I want to let the kids down. I want to let the families down, but which is extremely noble. And I think though at some point, and I do a lot of mentorship, but I think at some point it's, how am I also being treated? And is it going to keep going this way? Right. You know, are they respecting what I'm doing? I've had leadership changes multiple times where a new head of school or new university president or whatever the case was coming in, new vice president, you know, and you go from one who understands 100% of what you're doing and respects the school PR process and respects communications and know why you're asking for more money to do a website, even though you have all the facts there. And then when you get somebody new that might come in, and I remember specifically at one, and I won't name the school, but I had to do a presentation 18 times about getting a new website. Oh, this was when websites were still fairly new and we had gotten a great deal. And, you know, I'd already done all my research. I already planned everything. I already talked about admissions enrollment and, you know, all the impact it could have. And to have to do that 18 times, and I know I was proving my point. I know it. And it's almost demeaning,
yeah, it's demeaning,
right? And
sure.
So at that point, you know, when you're being asked to, or you're being put on the spot, or you're being questioned, and it just does not feel comfortable to you. I mean, obviously you have to be an adult and reflect and go, you know, and sometimes I even question myself. I'm like, I'll say to somebody on my team, I'm like, can you just please tell me, like, did I misspeak? Was I not clear? Mm-hmm. Like, I need to know, like, I need you to tell me. And I think that's one of the best things about the doctorate, because you spend so much time doing reflection as a leader. But you know, when you realize that you're not, and things are not going to be changing anytime internally, and you're not going to be getting the support, I think that's time for you to say, you know what, maybe, you know, at least in my mind, that was time for when I would say, I think it's time for me to look elsewhere.
Sure. No, I think that makes complete sense, honestly. And I appreciate your perspective as well. Amanda, I know that there are going to be people who want to reach out to you either to learn more, or people like me who want to hear all about how painful and long the doctoral process is because they're addicted to additional learning, or maybe want to take advantage of some of the offerings that Holdsworth Communication provides. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, the best way, if you go to our website, holdsworthcommunications.com, you'll see the links there for all of our social media. I am very happy to give out my personal email address to the community. It's Amanda, and it's a very long, it's one of these things, I'm like, gosh, this is a really long name. We should have thought about this. But Amanda at holdsworthcommunications, with the S.com. Happy to pass along any knowledge I might have that could be helpful, or anything in the network or any type of resources that we might have. It's, I think the one thing that has kept me in school PR for the longest time has been the phenomenal support systems. I have to say, going back to even working in private school PR, we used to get together, all the private schools in our area in a highly competitive area, and still get together once a month, mm-hmm, just to talk. And when I went to University of Michigan, all the communicators across University of Michigan and the health system, and it could be hundreds at a time, would get together once a month and just, you know, talk and support one another. And I think that's something that I've never found anywhere else. So I'm happy to share the resources that I have, or connect anybody with any place that they need to get connected. I like to think of myself as a super connector. If I don't have the resource, I probably know somebody who does, and I'm happy to help.
That's fantastic. And you are exactly right. The school PR tribe is so real. If you're not plugged in, then you need to start reaching out. You need to follow the hashtags on Twitter, and you need to start conversations, because this group of professionals is the most supportive group of humans I have ever met. Like, it is unreal. I don't believe that exists in other industries.
No, I don't think so. And, you know, years ago, and I think one of the beautiful things about, you know, ENSPRA, for example, is that I can maintain my APR accreditation through ENSPRA, mm-hmm, and I don't have to be a member. Not saying that there's anything wrong with other associations, but ENSPRA is my go-to, and obviously not an ENSPRA ad, but I just think it's such a phenomenal organization, and so supportive as well.
Absolutely. Amanda, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Erin. This was a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to School PR Happy Hour. If you have an idea for an episode in season 3, send us an email, schoolprhappyhour@gmail.com. And until next time, let's all try to be a little bit better at our jobs every day.